You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham. There's one thing about Facebook that just drives me nuts. Things with absolutely no credibility are posted as equal to those things that are factually based. I just wish there were as many scientists commenting on science topics as there are politicians commenting on science topics. Andrew Hoffman says, we're missing an important voice in social media, those scientists. He's a professor at the Ross School of Business at the University of Michigan, and he joins us now. We've talked, you and I have talked before, about researchers making themselves heard beyond their academic world. And in this essay you wrote for The Conversation, you're suggesting social media should be an important part of that. Why are you arguing that?
Social media is how people get their information, both the general public and our politicians. And so to ignore that important medium is to ignore the world changing around us. Social media is changing how we teach with multiple massive online open courses. It's changing the way we disseminate knowledge through open access journals, Twitter, Facebook. These are relevant in the public debate, and we ignore them at our peril.
I think sometimes, though, you're talking about teaching old dogs new tricks. You wrote, while we, meaning researchers, write our articles in academic journals and think we have contributed to public disclosure, there's a big problem with that because the general public and the politicians don't read academic journals. So what are you recommending they do? They still have to write those papers. What do they do after that?
That can be done in a couple of different ways, and a couple of points I want to make. One is that what I'm advocating is not a change for all academics, but sort of a broadening of the scope of what counts as being a legitimate academic. And some can be more engaged in public and political discourse, some less so. Then where I go from there is that we produce our academic papers, but we should add a step, and that is bring it to the public, as I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. Many academics won't do what I'm doing right now, sitting in this chair talking to you.
I know. I mean, I've covered a lot of science conferences, for example, and frankly, a lot of those researchers tell me they're reluctant to promote their own papers. It's kind of frowned upon by their colleagues, seen as too self-promotional. Mm-hmm. And, you know, respected scientists just don't want to do that. Not saying that you're not a respected scientist, yeah. Dr. Hoffman.
But no, but that's an important point because we suffer from the Carl Sagan effect. And that's been written about, that Carl Sagan was frowned upon as a popularizer and a hack because he brought it to the general public. Now, all academics don't have to do this. Some schools can hire writers to take their papers and turn them into policy briefs. There are many ways to skin this cat. But the key question is, how do we take that work from the world of academia and bring it to places that can use it, such as the general public discourse or the political process?
You know, often the schools don't really offer any kind of incentive to do this. There is incentive for writing papers being published and all those kinds of things. It's good and should happen. But what do you do if the university not only frowns on it, but maybe even discourages it?
Yeah, we could talk about the formal and the informal rules. The formal rules are, at the end of every year, I write up an annual report, and I have to write about my teaching, research, and service. And it's actually research, teaching, and service. Some schools are trying to change the criteria for annual review or promotion and tenure. The Ross School of Business, where I teach, has added a fourth criteria called practice, and that's how are you changing the world of practice of business. The Mayo Clinic has just added to their tenure and review process social media. Now I can hear people already crinkling their eyebrows. Well, how do you measure impact through that? Are Twitter followers really going to be relevant to a tenure decision? And I think that's a quick and glib question. I'm giving the question and the answer, but there are ways to start to work this out. We use citation counts for academic papers. It's a very imperfect measure. We can find other measures to measure impact.
I think any politician or, for that matter, news media member could tell you that there is impact with social media. I mean, we see it every day. It's not always what we'd like to see. Sometimes it's kind of misled. I mean, for example, issues such as vaccine and autism, climate change, some of the things you cited in your piece, you know, we get to a place where those are posted, like I was talking earlier, on Facebook, and sometimes those sincerely held political beliefs trump science.
Sure.
So you're going to be competing on that level. Is that a good place to be?
Well, compete we must. We can sit on the sidelines and we'll become increasingly irrelevant. And that will lead to outcomes such as what's happening in Wisconsin or North Carolina, where the state government is cutting back funding, not seeing the value of what we provide.
Funding of the university.
Funding of the university. I remember when, you know, the whole debate or controversy over smart meters on your house. And I had a friend call me and say, are they safe? And so I wanted to find some legitimate research that said, yes, they are. And I had to scroll through about two or three pages of Google pages, you know, the full sheet of pages,
right,
saying I get headaches, I get diarrhea, you name it, I get it because it's the smart box. And none of it was credible science.
I've read a lot of pieces in the last several months about society embracing anti-intellectualism. Do you think society at large has embraced these culture wars to the point that the only truth that matters is the truth I believe?
Well, certainly people are guided by motivated reasoning, and in these politically divided times, information is being coded as liberal or conservative, and science falls into that as well. But surveys show that upwards of 80% of Americans do value science and its contributions to society, so I don't think we're ready to jettison science altogether. But the vocal voices, the vocal minority, are the loudest voices that are heard. And, you know, NPR's own data, when they chose to eliminate the comment sections on their pages, and I probably just opened up a hot button there, but it's astonishing.
We're doing the same thing.
It's Michigan astonishing.
Radio made a decision that, you know, because we've seen research that shows that the comments are held in equal weight to the facts. Why do we spend all this money gathering facts and presenting them if it's going to be dismissed in the comments by somebody who's done no research and has just his own opinions?
And more importantly, we have to figure out a way to allow that comment section to be a genuine discussion. And that may sound idealistic, but right now the NPR data shows that a very, very, very small percentage of readers are actually commenting, and they are quick to use that as a place to pontificate, a soapbox.
You noted in your piece in the conversation that students who are thinking about careers as researchers at universities might not be willing to stick around if their institution doesn't value engagement with the public or worse, discourage it because they've been raised on social media. Is this new generation of scientists about to step into society at large in a way we haven't seen in a few decades?
Let's only hope so. The junior faculty and doctoral students that I see coming into the field, they're different than the older folks, and they do want to have real impact from their work. They do not want to measure their life's work in citation counts. And so I hope that they change academia. Academia doesn't spit them out. Another way to look at it, though, is that will there be certain schools that will say, we'll take them? We had a conference here a year ago, May, where Michael Crow from Arizona State was very vocal saying, you guys can stay in the ivory tower. We're going to engage and we're going to draw those best junior faculty to come to our school.
So are we seeing any evidence that things are changing within academia?
That was my whole point in writing this essay, was not just to focus on the problem, which many people are writing about, but to say that if you look carefully, you can start to see conversations emerging. Donors for research are starting to care about this. Tenure committees are starting to change. I hear conversations among journal editors. There are signs that there is some movement here, and you know, it's a very large institution with a lot of inertia. It will change slowly from many, many different pieces.
Andrew Hoffman is professor at the Ross School of Business, and he's the education director at the Graham Sustainability Institute at the University of Michigan. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks, Lester.